Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, how you doing, friends? It's your old pal, Justin Robert Young.
Brian Brushwood.
On the moon, I'm on a bench press, a bass. It'll be great.
Yeah! Dude, you're going to be like, you're going to be sweating so hard, and then the sweat's going to like do a weird like anti-gravity like thing.
Yeah. And then I'm gonna think back to a memory of me as a child when I was weak, and I'm like, I'm strong now.
Yes! Speaking of strong, is Mr. Bryce Post Malone Castillo?
No.
Hi, that's me.
In the break, it was commented by somebody that Bryce looks a lot like Post Malone. So,
hi, or Pre Malone. He's the before picture.
Malone.
Pre Malone.
Now I could get on board for Pre Malone.
Oh my God, we need that side by side that just says Pre Malone and then Post Malone. That meme is gonna go huge.
long time listener, friend of the show, Ken. Pelashok. I always see his name. I never know the right way to pronounce it, but I recognize Pelashok? The name.
Ken P.
Yeah, it just reminds me of like I think of like, you know, a prehistoric shark whenever I see that name. Mm. We found a bunch of Pelashoks inside the Grand Canyon, and they were devouring a Pelasquid. It was quite frightening. So he writes to us, "Hey, hi, After Things crew. I have a tendency whenever I embark on a creative endeavor to spend too much time on the final polish. Recently, I've been doing these simple snack tasting videos with my daughter. They're supposed to be fun, simple, minimal edits, little effort, easy to make videos. In another life, I made industrial safety videos for auto manufacturing. Before you know it, I've got the old After Effects booted up and I'm rendering lower thirds, editing late in the evening, which is 11 because I'm old. I'd also turned my simple single mic podcast into a highly produced sketch comedy audio drama that was taking up too much time and effort, and I eventually pod faded. In the manufacturing biz, they call that waste of overprocessing, wasting time, resources, and energy on something the customer might never notice and could care less about. Though I do believe my attention to detail has served me well in the past, I think there are some things that are worth the extra effort, like my writing comedy. How do you guys determine what and how much polish a project gets? P.S. I think lately SNL has been using OpenAI to write their sketches. I think OpenAI knows how to do closure and knows how to end a bit, so I don't think that's true.
Man, a blessing and a curse is the ability to refine and constantly see things that need improvement. There have been friends of mine who I love and deeply, deeply care about, but it is clear that there is a disparity between their confidence on how they killed it on stage and what I saw. And I perceived for a very long time that I was doing better because I was better at self-analysis and recognizing, you know what, that bit hung too long, that joke wasn't clear, I stumbled on these words or whatever, and I would hold on to those. Likewise, when it comes to editing specifically, editing is in many ways the most direct gateway to flow state I've ever seen. Like the ability to lose yourself and make hours and days vanish happen by just trying out a little to the left, a little to the right, little update. What about a different font? This, that, and the other things. And in fact, we had to, I don't think I'm talking out of school, but like Brant requested a schedule setup that removed from him the ability to push beyond a certain point. Like I said, well, hey, what if we made Wednesday our deadline? And he's like, straight in the eye, he's like, I know exactly what will happen is I will use all of the time up till Wednesday, and then I will insist that there needs to be more tweaks done, and I will figure out a way to use all the time from Wednesday through Friday. So we had to institute a production schedule that has a very, very hard deadline that even somebody who would love just a few more minutes to make this a little bit better. And the compromise is that, you know, it's a bummer. Some stuff goes out with you catch a misspelling here, you catch a wrong B-roll shot there. It sucks knowing that something imperfect was launched out into the world under your name. Also, doing that allowed us to keep a video a week for 3 years now, and has been vital to everything we've done. I don't see how the Modern Rogue could possibly be in the place where it is if we went back in time and made sure that nothing went out without mistakes. And it ended up being the gift of, you know, sorry, ready or not, this baby's coming, and let's go.
Well, I think also it's the health of brand, right? Like, as much as this is something that is great for the output, it's also important to reconcile the relationship between the artist and the art in terms of not fussing over it forever. There is a, you know, the among the great Steve Jobs quotes is, real artists ship. That the idea of a concept car is kind of worthless. Just show a dope car that you can sell, because you are in the micro, it's telling everybody about your cool idea and then not doing it. In the macro, it's look at what's possible if we literally had none of the constraints that we're definitely going to have to put out this product. So if you're looking at a podcast or a YouTube series, if the desire is there to do something and keep it going perpetually, then you need to understand that your adherence to a process that doesn't kill you is crucial. You would rather put out a simplistic thing that you can slowly make more complicated to the point that it is allowed than just say, oh, I'm going to solve all these problems with these very complex solutions, and then leave it on your own time management to be like, all right, well, what else do I cut out of my life to make sure that this can happen? At least in my opinion.
I'm a believer in processes, and I finished a book a couple weeks ago, and for a publisher, and I'm going to get Monday. There's a schedule. I'm going to get the developmental editor. It's going to send me his notes back, and I have a week. I have a week to spend with the book and work on it. And the first time I went through this process, I didn't quite really get how to apportion my time, but I have a week to spend on. I turned this book in and I felt like, man, it's rough. I wish I'd spent more time on it, but I knew, hey, there's a process. Somebody else is going to come in and make notes and stuff, and it's going to come back to me, and I can fix those things. And I got 7 days to work on it and put this thing in a good shape, and then it goes back, and there'll be another round, and eventually it's done, and I can't stop it. And I think that with anything is you can say, hey, I have 3 days to make this thing. I'm going to spend 1 day editing it. Worst case scenario, I'll push another day. And then I got to move it out the door, because you get the law of diminishing returns. Is you can, I could go through every single book I've written could be better. Every single book I could do, but there's a point at which, if I say no, I've got to make this one perfect, then those other books don't happen.
Yeah,
and you have to figure out your limit on that.
Can I throw a weird sideways vector? Is number one. I would say the majority of the things that you think are wrong don't matter. Occasionally, you're going to have to push something where there's something wrong that does matter, and then you will deal with it after the fact. You will patch it. You will make apologies. Oftentimes, of the times that it's wrong and it matters, all of a sudden you're like, oh, what a great content thing for my next thing to elaborate and clarify and make another step forward. And now I'm increasingly becoming comfortable with the idea that we're all old timers here on this podcast, and that we could think in terms of decades. That was an insane thought. In the early days of BB Live Show, there was no thinking of being able to revisit something 10 years after the fact. And yet here we find ourselves 10 years after the fact. And it is such a joy to, under the new relaunch of Scam Nation, to be able to and go do those very early episodes of Scam School and do them quote unquote right, or do them with a fresh take or whatever, covering the exact same material. Like, understand, You don't build a thing and then the thing lives and that stands as a proxy for you. You build an artistic engine of creation, and you continue to run that engine until the end of time, or until the end of your time. And like the, I don't know, Bryce, can, does any of this resonate with you? Like the idea that mm-hmm. the only people who could possibly be upset that we're revisiting or redoing something from 10 years ago are people who were there at the beginning. And those are the people most likely to say, oh man, I really like that you went back and revisited this thing.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling on a lot of that when it comes to revisiting content is, you know, especially when it's stuff from, you know, the first days of Scams. I mean, like Scam School before it was on YouTube was on a completely different website. And you go and you look back through the catalog of Scam School on YouTube because the other site's gone, and you just see like 40 videos that all came out on the same day because a lot of that stuff wasn't even coming out on YouTube at the time. And that means that, you know, over the 10 years or so, all the people who are coming and seeing the site and catching on probably missed it. And if they didn't miss it, they're probably not going to want to watch those videos because a lot of those older videos are not very good.
AKA unwatchable. And yes, look, if you're a NASA engineer, then of course, you know, you want to get it right the first time.
They're different, yeah.
But if you are intending, all good artists are prolific artists. And somebody can find a counterexample, fine, appears. But all good artists are prolific artists. And if you've already made the decision to become prolific, then that means you're better off setting a hard deadline and sending out something as is, and then that thing that you wished you could have done in there, you'll find another place to put that module down the road.
So I did a lecture this weekend over the Magic Castle for their juniors program. So the Magic Castle has, these are high school age kids, and there's about 40 or 50 kids there that showed up for this, which was great. And a few years ago, I was thinking about, like, you know, I've been writing illusion books since I was a teenager, and I thought maybe I should put all these things together because they still sell a little bit here and there. But I thought maybe I should put them all together into one volume, just as a way to bring out the old material, make it accessible, available. And I was on the fence about this because I'm like, do I do this? You know, should I just come up with new stuff, or maybe? And I thought, like, there's probably a lot of people who just aren't aware, don't know all the stuff I've created, and it might be need to make it accessible. And I said, why don't I just take like the first 20 years of stuff and put it in one book? And I put together my book, Illusion XX, right?
Yeah.
Illusion 20.
Which, by the way,
I'm setting up to go do my presentation. This was on illusion building. So like I went to Home Depot and I bought tons of cardboard boxes and materials and stuff. So I showed them everything, all kinds of magic techniques about how to vanish people. And it was a fun lecture. And I'll talk a little bit about, even though it was rough from my standards, it was good. I'm setting up and I hear this kid go, hey, you know, and come over to me, 15-year-old kid, one of the members of the show of the club, he's got a copy of the book. He's a big fan of the book, loved the book, wanted me to sign the book. And I'm thinking, most of the things in this book were written before he was born.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the thing of thinking, like, if I hadn't put this stuff into this book, it wouldn't be out there, and this kid never would have found it.
And here's the crazy part. As a much more mature artist than you were when you wrote that stuff, I am certain that you look back at the formatting, the font choice, some of the timely references at the time, and you just want to wince and cringe and be ashamed or whatever. But with age, you begin to recognize, like, no, they were just of their time. When I look at the 720p Scam School early episodes, where there's definitely a white pixel on one of the three cameras because that camera had a flawed dead pixel and they knew it and they didn't have the money to buy another camera, it, all of that, like part of me, if I was to put that out today, I mean, outside of like intentionally, you know, pretending it was a 10-year-old video or something, I would wince. I would be like, this is not of sufficient quality. Good. That's fine. It is just of its time. And nobody holds that against you unless your character is to pretend that you're always perfect all the time. You know, if you're trying to go for like a Michael Jackson vibe or something, you might.
And it's okay to republish stuff because stuff gets lost.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Like,
what I liked about this book was, like, I have, like, I start off with illustrations that were literally made in MS Paint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then you get into the later years, I'm using photography, I'm using better computer modeling and stuff. And that was the thing that for me was like, kind of, you know, it gets much more sophisticated.
Well,
you know?
And take it from a guy who had a fairly ridiculous hairstyle for a good 15 years. You know, it's the only way to lose is to act like you were supposed to be perfect the whole time. And of course not. It's like, yeah, that's where I was. What's the next question, sir?
Yeah. And, you know, so I did my talk and it was about, I don't know, 2.5 hour talk on Saturday and obviously very well received. And afterwards,
obviously, because you were giving it.
I thought to myself, like, okay, I know as a speaker, I get rusty and I have bad habits. I use, you know, poor grammar, and I know that I probably slouch in my presentation and whatever like that. I don't think anybody cared. Nobody cared because it was about the content. And I thought, like, a mistake that sometimes we make is, I think classes like Toastmasters and things like that are great for getting used to public speaking. But after a period of time, really, you got to think about it's the content, the content, the content, the content, and get to a point where it's presentable. Then just keep making content. Then just keep moving forward. Don't obsess because I can edit this YouTube video perfectly great. Guess what? It could be the most perfectly edited thing in the world. When you start off, it's never going to get more than 1,000 views. It doesn't matter. The next video is what matters.
And, you know, keeping to us, you know, we've talked about on this show, keeping to a schedule, keeping to a regular, you know, expectation for your audience. That is also a quality of your work, right? If you say like, oh, you know, we're doing these easy videos and there's such that, you know, we could do one, you know, every week, right? Well, if you keep having to push them back because you're spending all your extra time on making nicer lower thirds or doing graphics or putting more and more stuff into that is a quality that is a factor of the work. And consider that the work that you're doing is not just any individual piece but also the larger structure that you have. You know, if something doesn't come out in a close enough time or it just doesn't come out, you know, he mentions pod fading with his podcast. This might be a little harsh, but that is a larger failure than having a more simpler show that you're doing more regularly.
You're totally right. It is a paralysis of pre-creation. It is actively trying to strangle your product, the desire to make every little thing perfect, because ultimately, and all of us have been through processes where you realize that the actual journey you're going on is in identifying the key worth, the key value of what you are doing and evolving that. And spoiler alert, unless you happen to guess right, the key worth is probably not, I need to have motion graphics on these lower thirds. The key worth is not, I need to make sure that all my ums and ahs are out of here. The key worth is not that. It's something within your product. It's something within yourself. It's something within what you are putting out. And in a podcast, a lot of that is you just figuring out what your audience is responding to, what they like, how your talent meets their expectation and excitement, and then finding and honing that element of it. And I don't know if, I mean, like, maybe it is nice production. Maybe it is that you polish everything up into these beautiful little nuggets, right? But even then, you got to get them done. Mm-hmm. And you got to figure them out. And if you want to have a thing that goes for a long time, this is the process. It is getting it out and figuring out what's in there. And if you're not even getting to that point because you're, you know, a pre-perfecting everything, then you're not even on the path. You're not even on the road.
Yeah.
I want to throw out a plug here. If you're into podcasting right now, check out my project, podcastlink.com. I'm trying to come up with tools to make it easier to podcast. And part of the reason pod fading happens is it's still a lot of work. You know, if we didn't have Bryce here, it'd be just, this show would just be a phone call between Justin
and it costs money. I mean, thank goodness that Bryce came into our organization when he did, and that we went on Patreon just at that time, because I think in an alternate universe, if the twin tools of Bryce's production skills and Patreon did not happen, mm-hmm. I I can't see this show being around. Well, certainly not After Things, but not Weird Things either. Just because, like, that little bit of tedium and that time to set it up in a digestible format, it matters.
I mean, you guys had the Patreon, and how many weeks did it go before anyone realized you had to actually use it to get money from it?
Okay, all right. This is a couple weeks. All right, classic.
But that's an execution. That's part of finishing. You know, talking about completing your product. Yeah. So yeah, podcastlink.com.
Shout out though, if you're into podcasting, sign up. There's more stuff coming to it. There's going to be more features to try to make things easier and stuff besides just that. So maybe
we should pivot on this, because you're probably going to be dealing with a version of this same kind of paralysis. You're going to be tempted to – have you set like an end point of how refined you want to make Podcast Linked?
I am very uneasy about a number of things as far as how the whole thing works, but I've decided I'm going to put it out there sooner than – I made it – I got rid of all what I think are the rough ends. Like, you know, if something breaks and you're using it, that you figure out how to get hold of me, or I figure out how to solve it. And I'm putting it out there right now. I'm like, sign up for it. And I'm, you know, every couple of days I go look to see who signed up for the beta. I'm trying to get more people on board. I've just added a feature where, you know, we're going to create an inbox. So you could just, I have podcastmail.com. So to make it very easy, if you have a podcast and you want all of your email to go to one spot, to control that. And so I'm just, my goal is, I don't know what the right way to make these things work. I don't know what the right form is. I hop on the phone with Justin and we talk about this stuff and we figure out this would be a solution we think would work. I know the thing that's going to be the most helpful for me is seeing how people use it or don't use it. If I put out something, I think like, oh, this is great, I've solved a problem. Nobody else is like, no, you haven't. Or people are like, you haven't. Then I haven't solved it. And so I have to put it out there. So,
yeah.
And that's, I think, part of the regulator. Is that you're not trying to keep it to yourself and assume, and now you're getting into the forever, the infinite branching paths of, oh, well, what I want to do is do this, and I want to do it. And then I solved this problem for this, that this was eventually going to come up, so I wound up doing it like this. And so that's why Podcast Link is now a direct platform for art subscription. You know, like there's always, and this is not, I mean, this is something that I know Andrew struggles with, because you are creating things and you are making things out of whole cloth. But this is the problem that I think a lot of high functioning creators go on, is like, you have to regulate it with society, because ultimately that's who's going to use it. That's who's going to interact with it. So,
I just said, okay, let me make a useful link, you know, shortener or whatever for podcasting. I said, let me just do that. You know, let me make this one simple thing, put that out there, get people on board with, hey, let's come up with some tools for podcasting. Here's a tool right now. And then let's make this work. And then here's another tool. And then here's another way to get paid, which is where I'm getting at, to help people, you know, increase that, et cetera. So there's, but it's just, I've spent most of my life coming up with perfect plans, and then you find out that reality has different ideas.
Yeah, so. and that's the hard part, is that your creative impulse then is, you know, to do the kind of the Seymour Skinner, is it the world that has changed? No, it's the kids that are wrong.
Yeah,
you know, you want to defend what you have and rationalize it, and that's, to me, the biggest difference between people who really create things that connect and
so,
people that have really great ideas is just putting it out there and understanding this is for the people, not for my ego and my brain.
If I can loop back to a previous recommendation, I think there's a pretty good example of exactly this. I think I recommended the book Start With Why recently, where it's like a picture of bullseye at the outside is what you do. Next ring is how you do it. And then the center is why you do it. Apple is mentioned a lot in this book, specifically because they know their why. They know their why so much that their what completely changed. If you start with what and then work your way inward, and we already said all this on here, so I'm just hopefully reminding you or bringing you up to speed. Dell Computers, what do? They sell computers. How do they do it? They sell it cheaper because it's direct to customers. Why do they do it? I don't know, because you probably want them cheaper, right? Whereas Apple is like, why? We want to empower individual creators to change the world. How? You know, it's like, you know, by offering the tools that they need. What? Computers. That's the tool. And then they changed their what completely. I can't think of anything farther from desktop computers to phones or watches or whatever. But because their why was so very solid, it's not weird at all that they suddenly go into wildly different businesses. So likewise, when I think about that for me, the what, if you were what focused, what? I'm a magician who is awesome on stage and eats fire. How? Because I only have two trunks, I'm able to fly around the country and do lots of shows. Why? Because people, I guess, want to see a show or whatever. That was me 20 years ago. Now me starting with why is why I want to make everybody who I want to give everybody who listens to my voice the gifts to be more interesting, more clever, to get ahead in life and be more all those things. Right. How I do YouTube channels. I listen to people. I do podcastings when I can. I do TV shows and live appearances, everything to share the stuff. The what has changed wildly to where I don't even tour anymore. The what in the beginning was a stage show, and yet because my why is clear now, it doesn't matter that the what is now podcasts and media and merchandise. I mean, how far from, like, if you told me 20 years ago, hey, Fire Eater, you're going to discover you could touch more lives and do better, more interesting things by buying land, building an empire, and sending out lightning lighters, and that will be more true to your form than the other. Anyway, so the point is, don't get hung up in the mechanics. No matter how good it feels to undergo revision after revision after revision, you know, realize that you're better off locking down this chapter. Think of everything as chapters. That's not the whole story. No one episode of this thing is the whole story. They're chapters, and they're books I love with chapters that I don't see the point of.
And also, look, if you're doing this for your daughter, if you want, like, this is part of it is that she gets to do a thing and you guys get to work together, then primarily your job is to be a producer, and producers produce. like they literally, their job is to make sure that it gets out as good as it can be. So this is now your number one point is to yell at the editor who is finessing these After Effects things and making sure that it ships, making sure that it gets out and it keeps going for as long as your daughter wants to do it or you want to do it, right? Like that's your job, is to, like, you know, I think that there's a great benefit that can happen when you segment out the roles that you are playing, you know, talent, editor, producer, because you realize, oh, wait, I have one bad employee. I might have two really good employees, but I have one bad employee, and I need to have a conversation with that employee.
There's a thing that happens when you can plan, but a different part of your brain kicks in when you have to release. I had to go do my talk Saturday morning, and I haven't done a talk like this in years. And I went around 2 days. I know now enough to plan, like, don't wait till Friday to go get all the props I need. Get all the props I need 2 days before so I can spend the day before not stressing, not worried about anything. I did that. But Friday night, I'm like, man, I do some cool stuff with umbrellas. I didn't get any umbrellas. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get umbrellas in the morning and bring them. And it was a minor thing, but it helped make a point that I was trying to make when I did my presentation. My girlfriend's a filmmaker, right? And, you know, there's nothing like, hey, our movie's going to be in front of people at a screening in 4 days for you to sit down and watch it in that light and go, what do we need to work on? What do we really, really want to change? What do you want to do? All of a sudden, a different set of instincts kicks in. And that's the beauty of releasing. When you know you have to release something and say it's going out on this date, you figure out what's important and what's not. Figuring out, you know, what font this should be in is not an important detail. These other little things, you go, those are irrelevant. What matters is the content there, and then do we people understand it?
And yeah, and that's one of the things Ken's asking about. How do you determine how much polish you should give to something? And a deadline is super helpful. And I mean, you know, Ken comes from, you know, a video production background. He knows deadlines. If you want these things to be a series or a regular thing, then put it on the calendar. So, Tuesdays, the days is when it's got to be done. I know how much free time I have between from Tuesday to Tuesday.
Well, plus also figure out a way to publish out stuff that you know doesn't meet your standard. Like, and it's a weird thing to say, but publish what you perceive as substandard stuff and wait for the feedback. Listen to the audience. Figure out, oh, wait, that thing that's taking up 70% of all my time is the thing that nobody cares about? Grant Thompson, I hope I'm not talking out of school, once expressed that he was about to be out. He was about to be out of doing YouTube's, talking about the King of Random, one of the most popular channels on the planet. He was like, I can't do it. I work so hard on the voiceovers and the editing, and I have to get everything right. And then he flipped a switch, and he's like, you know what? Just going to do low-res videos every day, see what happens. And what happened was he became one of the most popular people on the planet, because it turned out that all the stuff that he was investing so much time, energy, and effort in was not, you know, him hiding behind the camera, just being a voice, narrating this well-crafted stuff, none of that mattered. What we wanted to see was the person and the raw surprise of the experiments that he wanted to do. So always keep in mind the strong possibility that what you perceive as the most important thing about what you do might not matter at all.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. All right. Picks. So
I got a pick.
Okay.
I told you that I'm reading the Dark Tower series with my daughter. Right. Got through some awkward parts of the book.
Yeah, it's pretty open to the pretty old lady and the gun. And, you know.
And you know, it's weird because I didn't read the Dark Tower series until I was in my early 20s, but I certainly read plenty of other Stephen King at her age. So however awkward it must have been, it's like, I don't know. My job is to be all like, this is Stephen King, kiddo. But at any rate, my frustration is that because we're going through it together, I keep wanting to go ahead of her on the Dark Tower series. And I was like, I got to find another place for this energy. So I went ahead and I downloaded for one Audible credit all 47 hours of The Stand. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm already like 10 hours in. I forgot so many of these characters that I had met 20 plus years ago. What was it, 1990?
Harold Lauder.
In fact, he just showed up today. That's where I'm at. It's the first time that Fran meets him. it's great. Dark stuff. But it definitely stands up.
Can you give people an elevator pitch? I don't know what The Stand is.
The Stand is a superflu virus wipes out 99.94% of all of humanity. So only 99.96 or something. Basically, four people in 1,000 are left standing. And so the first third of the book is about the leaking of the virus and the spread throughout everything and the downfall of humanity. Mm-hmm. Second third is what happens when all of a sudden there's infinite anything. You could take whatever you want because everybody just dropped dead.
Yeah.
And then the third of the book is the supernatural part where people are having dreams and they find themselves attracted to either this light side area or the dark side area. You either are dreaming of Nebraska or Las Vegas. And then there's a final showdown between the remnants of humanity.
Yeah.
And it's delightful, and it's filled with characters, and it's so very, very human. It's one of the most human of Stephen King's works. And interestingly, you may not know, was originally published at just shy of 800 pages, maybe 750 in the 1970s. But then he, once it became successful, had the opportunity to say, okay, this 450 pages I cut out, did that need to be cut out? And he went through it again, and so the 1990 version is like 1,280 pages hardback. It's amazing. Like if you're looking for value for your Amazon credit dollar, you're not going to do better than Stephen King's The Stand.
There you go.
Excellent. I heartily endorse your recommendation, Brian. Not that people were waiting for me to say that.
The guy does a fine job of, you know, reading it. The narrator matters in these kind of things. You know, it's a he's no Frank Muller or is it who's the guy who does Harry Potter?
J.K. Rowling
Or John Lee or anyway, but he's good.
Daniel Radcliffe.
I have a pick. This is a little lighter. Netflix has a new season out of their remake of One Day at a Time, a family sitcom. Pretty standard stuff, multi-camera. I it's pretty weird that in 2019, one of the shows that I'm quickest to like finish binging when it comes out is a multi-camera, pretty traditional sitcom format show. But I really dig it. I think that there are you know, when House of Cards came out on Netflix, it was like kind of a novel thing that you'd have these like long episodes of this show and like not do like recaps or not need to write it in such a way that was resetting, you know, resetting up the concepts every time. And I think kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum, like having a like sitcom like this also benefits from that, because you can do more shorter length arcs. You can do stuff that's only a couple of episodes of an arc, but without needing to like really hammer in like, there's some of it, but really hammer in like, oh, you know, remember the establishing for why you're doing this thing. And there are also like a lot of really good kind of feel like, you know, a very special episodes. You know, it deals a lot with like modern social issues, and I think they're all good. I do wish that season three was a little less heavy. I think there's just kind of a little bit of density with that sort of stuff, but I think this is a really fun show, and I can't imagine anybody who would not have an okay time giving this a shot.
So, cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I have a pick. So I have had a issue trying to find a replacement for an app that I loved called Soundboard by Ambrosia Software, but then Ambrosia Software stopped, I think, either servicing that or maybe even existing. They were really great for Mac apps for sound stuff, and then they just stopped. So I've been on the hunt for I literally rode that app until the new iOS told me it would not use it. And I've been on the hunt ever since. I think I might have finally found my replacement. It is called Backpack, and I was in a fit of rage because the program that I was using was not super effective at importing stuff from Dropbox, but this one was. It's like $7.99, which I think is
that's reasonable.
A very fair price for an app like that. The layout is clean enough. Like, a lot of the soundboard apps are just, they look like total garbage. This one is not the most beautiful app I've ever seen in my life, but it is functional enough, and it is not ugly to look at. And I have had it was a really, really easy time setting everything up here today, so I can play on my
Man, this spontaneous crowd and all the excitement.
I love it.
It's so amazing. Yeah. so much so that I think is Skype joke for a second.
Yeah, Skype broke because it was too awesome. but there we go.
Well, on that note, my pick is actually a pick I've picked before and relevant to what I'm working on is just the book Blitzscaling, which is just – It's not always the right approach, but just the thing that I take from there is, if you're not sure if it's a good idea, if it's going to work, but you have the opportunity to put it out there in front of people, then just do that. Just do that, because you can play little mental games in your head all you want of like, maybe this will work, maybe this will work. And it's like, you know, if you're trying to make something that's useful for people, you know who can tell you if it's useful?
People
using it. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, man, I owe you the rest of Blitzscaling. I've got about a third into it when they emphasize on just how all or nothing the practice of Blitzscaling is. Like, if your goal is to take territory and hold territory and then take territory again, then Blitzscaling is not for you. And I remember very clearly thinking, hey, Turns out, right now at this moment, blitzscaling is not for me because I intend to take territory and hold on to it rather than bet everything on a constant doubling down. And so I think once we get construction done on the project, I will be in a mental state to resume reading blitzscaling.
Yeah, they get into explaining when it's right, when it's not, and at what stage you're at. Maybe it's not the right stage, or there might be a point or whatever. It is a high risk take all sort of proposition, and it's suited for some things and not for others. So on that note, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.